Having identified various types of unemployment in an underdeveloped country like India, it may be instructive and important to distinguish unemployment in an underdeveloped country from that of unemployment in a developed country. This will enable us to see our problem of unemployment from a different angle, and also to assess as to whether and to what extent unemployment of the type that exists in developed countries also exists here. Now we'll study types of unemployment in developed economies. Heading is types of unemployment in developed economies. In developed economies, there are two dominant types of unemployment. One is clinical unemployment and other one is frictional unemployment. So there are two types, clinical unemployment and frictional unemployment. Clinical unemployment. Associated with the downswing and depression phases of business cycle, it is to be found in capitalist or market-oriented developed economies. Caused by the lack of coordination among the innumerable decision makers in the fields of saving and investment, the trade cycle in its downward phase renders many unemployed. Falling income lowers demand for goods and services. As a result, the economy produces less than it is capable of, aggravating further the employment income situation. Teams who analyzed this type of unemployment came out with the solution of raising demand even with public works programs on government account to give fillip to the sagging market and to raise profitability or marginal efficiency of capital. Such unemployment is not a characteristic phenomenon of a country like India. The reason is that trade cycle is an inherent feature of an industrial economy based on private property and not that of an agricultural economy. In an agricultural economy, production is largely determined by nature. The industrial sector is small so that even if depression originates in this sector, it cannot be a serious one. Depression may, however, enter such a country through a fall in demand for agricultural exports. In such a case, prices of agricultural products and income of farmers will go down. However, agricultural output will not fall. Farmers have to produce to subsist. Again, what was shown before the fall in prices will result in output, depression or no depression. One can distinguish the problem of unemployment of an underdeveloped economy from that of a developed economy by listing the former as originating from the supply side and the latter having relevance to the demand side. In the former case is which? Problems of unemployment of an underdeveloped economy. So, in the former case, the low level of development keeps the number of jobs down. In the latter case, it is deficiency on the demand side which keeps a large part of productive capacity idle and therefore throws employed workers into unemployment pool. In the case of underdeveloped economies, enough jobs just do not exist. In developed countries, enough jobs exist, but this enough is not realized during the period of depression. Here, a word may be added about the current unemployment situation in developed countries, namely that which is associated with stagflation. This concept is used to convey the present stagnation along with inflation. So long, economists have attributed stagnation only to deflation or recession or depression. This is, however, a new phenomenon where there is stagnation along with high inflationary prices. It is a situation where both prices and costs are high and rising. At high prices and at high cost of production, enough demand is not forthcoming to keep up economic activity at a level which can ensure employment to all. As a result, unemployment is on the increase in developed countries. To an extent, a similar phenomenon is to be found in India at the present, but this is far from being a problem. Frictional unemployment. This type of unemployment characterizes developed economies as they push towards further development. At a higher level of development, many changes take place in the industrial structure of these economies, with old industries contracting and dying out and new industries coming up. This process seems to be endless. In fact, without this, no development is possible. The products, the resources, and the technologies undergo changes, making the structure of an economy a picture of permanent change. In such a situation, it is but desirable that workers move from industry to industry, leaving those which are decaying and joining those which are leading the way to further growth and which promise higher wages and rewards. In between the time of leaving and joining, the time for which labor gets no work is the period of unemployment, and that is called as frictional unemployment. This period can be used for getting training or for acquiring new skills. Such an employment is therefore a necessary price for progress. In India, such unemployment also does not exist to an extent that might cause much concern. Here and there one hears of new technology, for example, computer, being introduced, displacing a certain number of workers. But this is not in any sense a big problem. This is so because the initial capital stock is very low, and with agricultural predominant in India's occupational structure, there is very little diversification in Indian economy, and therefore there cannot be much by way of change in the economic structure, causing frictional displacement of type described above. Now we finished the types of unemployment in developed economies. Moving ahead, now we will read the magnitude and trends. Heading is magnitude and trends. After having taken up the types of unemployment, we now discuss the size of unemployment in the country. We describe the unemployment as a whole, which includes chronic unemployment and underemployment, that is seasonal unemployment and part-time unemployment, as also chronic unemployment separately. In this regard, it will be useful first to refer to the methods of measuring unemployment in the country. This is important because the conventional measure of open unemployment practiced in developed countries is not sufficient to capture the different forms of underemployment in the country. So, measurement concepts. Heading is measurement concepts. Recognizing the inadequacy of conventional measure which covers only open unemployment, NSSO, that is the National Sample Survey Organization. What is it? NSSO, that is the National Sample Survey Organization, uses three concepts to estimate the unemployment in the country. One is the measurement of unemployment on usual status, US, usual status basis. So, one is the measurement of unemployment on the usual status, that is US basis. In terms of this concept, a person is considered unemployed if he/she was not working but was either seeking or was available for work for a relatively longer time or throughout the reference year. The estimates are given in terms of numbers or persons. Second is the unemployment on current weekly status basis, that is CWS basis. The reference period is a week, current weekly status. So reference period is a week. A person is considered unemployed if he, she has not worked even for 1 hour during the week but was seeking or available for work. The estimates are made in terms of the average number of persons unemployed per week. The third is unemployment on current daily status basis, that is CDS basis, current daily status basis. It records the activity status of a person for each day of the 7 days preceding the survey. A person who worked for one or more during a day, the person was considered having worked for half a day. So a person who worked for 1 hour or more during a day, the person was considered having worked for half a day. If worked for 4 hours or more during a day, the person was considered as employed for whole day. The estimates are given in terms of total person days of unemployment. That is, the aggregate of all the unemployment days of all persons in the labor force. The US unemployment may be regarded as a measure of chronic or long-term unemployment during the reference year. The CWS unemployment also measures chronic unemployment but with a reduced reference period of a week. Its estimates also indicate seasonal and part-time unemployment or underemployment. The CDS is a comprehensive measure of unemployment. It measures both chronic unemployment as well as underemployment on weekly basis. So what were all these? CWS was current weekly status. US was usual status. CDS was current daily status. Now we will study large unemployment. The magnitude of unemployment is massive indeed. The number of those underemployed is a huge one, and of these in open unemployment is quite a big one. This has been in the past many years with little improvement in some years. The underemployed as estimated in terms of CDS in the 55th round of NSSO for 1999-2000 account for as many as over 6% of the labor force. Those in open unemployment are around 2% of the labor force. In recent years, open unemployment first registered some improvement, but later on situation deteriorated somewhat, with the rate of unemployment declining from 3.77% in 1987-88 to 2.56% in 1993-94 to 1.9% during 1992-97, that is 8th plan period, and again rising to 2.22% in 1993-94 to 1999-2000. In respect of unemployment, there is practically no change, with the rate falling marginally from 6.09 to 6.03 during this period. If we render these percentage into absolute numbers, the figure of unemployed would run into many millions of people. Then comes worst affected. While the overall unemployment situation is bad enough, it is extremely grim for large many in the country. As among states, for example, while unemployment exists in all the states, its incidence is very high at over 10% in Goa, Kerala and Tamil Nadu. in the poor states like UP, Rajasthan and Bihar, while the rates of unemployment are lower, the people are suffering acutely because of very low income work. Looking at unemployment by sex, one finds that the position of female is worse with 6.33% unemployed as against 5.90% for males. In respect of open unemployment, the situation for females is slightly better with unemployment at 2.44% as against 2.60% for males. Of the unemployed, the situation is pretty grave for those who have been thrown out of their regular employment in the form of self-employment and salaried employment. Both these forms of employment shrunk during 1987-88 to 1993-94. The former, that is 1987-88, from 53.9% to 51.9%, and the later from 15.2% to 14.2%. The result is an increase in the casual workers whose number increased from 31.2% to 33.5% during this period. This situation marks both the urban sector and the rural sector. Casualization of workforce has shown a further increase in the 55th round. Next heading, problem of unemployment. Problem of unemployment. After having taken up the types of unemployment and their estimates, we now formulate the nature of unemployment problem that the country faces. It is essentially a twofold problem: inadequacy of work and low productivity of work. So there are two problems: inadequate work and low productivity work. Inadequate work. One aspect of the problem is non-availability of work to the extent needed for the entire labor force. For those in disguised unemployment, this means that they are not getting work to engage themselves fully during their working hours. In other words, these workers, though apparently employed, are in fact not fully employed. Depending upon the reference period, whether a week or a year, for estimating the period of their unemployment, these workers do not get work for most of the week or most of the year. If they seem to be working, they are in fact sharing the existing work. Actually, almost each one is underemployed, so that none is working to one's capacity. Among them, there are some who are only seasonally employed, that is, when it is sowing time or harvesting time. For the rest of the time, they are either without work or do some other odd jobs or share with others some other work. All these in disguised unemployment account for a major proportion of the workforce, and they are mostly to be found in agriculture and the activities allied to it. This type of unemployment constitutes the substance of unemployment situation in the country. Besides those in disguised unemployment, there are those in open unemployment. These are the workers who just do not have any work to do. These unemployed are also to be found in the rural areas. However, most of these are in the urban areas. Their number, taking both the rural and the urban unemployed, though small as against those in disguised unemployment, is on the increase. Low productivity work. So, second problem is low productivity work. First one was inadequate work. Another aspect of the problem concerns income of those employed. Most of them are very poor because their earnings are very small, which in turn are caused by low productivity of their work. These poor are working because they can hardly afford to remain unemployed and wait for high paid jobs. They engage themselves in any work that comes their way and at incomes, howsoever low these may be. The bulk of labor force in the country is self-employed and works mostly in the primary sector where work sharing is very common. With labor force increasing and the productivity remaining almost the same, the average income remains very small. It may be useful to note here that the desperate attempts on the part of large many laborers to engage in any activity to stave off hunger gives the impression of high rates of employment or low rates of unemployment in the country. The reality, however, is that most of these employed are no better than those totally unemployed, as both the categories of workers are living at the subsistence level. In fact, quite among them, even below that level. Next is chronic or structural. The unemployment in the country is in the nature of a chronic or permanent one and is rooted in the underdeveloped character of the economy. It is the incapacity of the low-level economy to offer adequate work opportunities and high-income employment to the labor force that has given rise to their problem. It is thus the supply side of employment situation which is at fault. Unless the economy develops and the per head capital, both physical and human, that is education, training, etc., increases, the deficient supply side will continue and with it will persist the unemployment in its present form. It may be useful to contrast this unemployment with that in the developed countries. In those countries, the economy has acquired after a long run of development the wherewithal to create high paid jobs. That is, so far as supply side is concerned, there is, unlike in the underdeveloped countries, no difficulty. If and when unemployment occurs in these countries, it is because of the deficiency of demand for goods and services which the economy can produce. Hence, the measure to get over unemployment in those countries are directed towards stimulating demand. In an underdeveloped country like India, it is the supply side that has to be looked after. This requires growth of the economy with rising capital formation at its basis. Now, the next heading is causes and remedies. We are studying causes and remedies. From the above, it is obvious that the unemployment situation is grim indeed. It has therefore to be tackled with appropriate measures and on an urgent basis. However, before we discuss the ways and means of removing unemployment, it is necessary that we understand the causes that have given rise to it. So now we will study the main causes. The major causes which have been responsible for the widespread unemployment can be spelled out as under. So what we are studying now? We are studying the main causes. So, next heading is underdevelopment. This is the main cause for unemployment, that is underdevelopment. In the context of vast and varied unutilized natural resources as also manpower, it is stressing the obvious that the Indian economy by and large continues to be in the state of underdevelopment. The volume of economic activities at present, determined largely by agriculture, is low and the rate of rise in such activities is small. The non-agricultural sector, in particular, the modern industrial sector, which was to provide increasing avenues of employment, is growing at a very slow pace. The unfortunate situation of slow growth characterized the Indian economy even before independence. During the British period, the flourishing
indigenous small-scale and cottage industries, instead of expanding and transforming themselves into modern industries, were destroyed. Certain other policies in respect of customs, duties, freight rates, etc. also prevented the emergence of new industries. After the attainment of independence, there was no doubt a more favorable atmosphere for rapid industrialization of the country. But actual performance in this sector fell far short of the planned targets and needs. The slow capital formation for long also inhibited the growth potential of activities both in the agricultural sector and the industrial sector. The inadequacy of irrigation facilities, the shortage of fertilizers and power, unsatisfactory transport facilities, etc., all caused largely by slow growth of the capital goods sector, have adversely affected the expansion rate of work opportunities in the most important segment of Indian economy, namely agriculture. Similarly, the development of industries has been hindered by the non-availability of machines, power, transport, essential raw materials, etc.
So, the first main cause of unemployment is underdevelopment. Coming to the next heading, inadequate employment planning, which is the second main cause of unemployment. Planning in India, in operation since 1951, has not contributed adequately to the solution of this problem. This is largely because of the lower priority to the employment objective and the underrating of human resources. Employment till recently did not form an integral part of planning strategy in the sense that this objective was never quantified as a time-bound program. Neither was the objective mentioned in precise terms of full employment, even in the long-term perspective plans. Nor was there even what can be described as employment-oriented planning. In other words, no consideration was given or appropriate birth found in the plans for policies like devising an appropriate real wage policy as an instrument of employment expansion in the classical style, or promotion of labor incentive techniques in a big way, where, without prejudice to output or cost, such choices were available. Further, little has been done to utilize the Marxian variety of labor surpluses in villages, excepting in the earlier stages where community development programs were very much in the forefront, and very recently, beginning from the last year of the fourth plan, when some employment programs came into the picture. There is little that can be documented as a consistent and comprehensive program of utilizing labor. To this overall inadequacy of planning may be the added weak manpower planning, that is, balancing of manpower needs and supplies in the various branches of production in the various regions of the country and in various skills. In some sectors of economy, there is more than we needed, while in others, there is less than required. So is the case with many regions and various skills. These imbalances have largely arisen in the sphere of educated and trained personnel, such as engineers, cost accountants, administrators, etc. Even in those spheres where large resources of community were at stake and where manpower budgeting could take care of these problems, not much has been done. So now we have discussed the first two causes, first two main causes of unemployment, that is underdevelopment and inadequate employment planning. Coming to the third main cause, rapid population growth, which is the heading. The rapid growth of population, in particular since 1951, has adversely affected the unemployment situation largely in two ways. In the first place, it has directly affected it by making large additions to labor force. Of course, how much of the evil of unemployment can be ascribed to this factor depends upon the rate of growth of job opportunities. Had the rate of development been higher and the 5-year plans given more proper employment orientation, there would have been a large number of jobs than are available. Consequently, the addition to labor force on account of rapid population growth would have been a lesser evil. Nevertheless, it is also true that the rate of job expansion could never have been as high as population growth would have required. To that extent, therefore, the population factors have contributed to the worsening of unemployment situation. This is evident from the fact that the increase in the labor force has been higher than the rate of population growth. This means that the population is becoming younger, requiring the creation of new job opportunities at an increasing rate. Actually, however, employment expansion has not been sufficient to match the growth of the labor force and to reduce the backlog of unemployment. The result has been a worsening of unemployment situation. The second consequence of the rapid population growth has been to worsen indirectly the unemployment situation by reducing the resources for capital formation. Any rise in population over a large absolute base, as in India, implies a large absolute number. This means large additional expenditure on their rearing up, maintenance, education, etc. As a result, more resources get used up in private consumption like food, clothing, etc. and in the public consumption, for example, drinking water, electricity, medical and educational facilities, etc. This has reduced the opportunities of diverting a large population of incomes to savings and investment. Population growth has thus created hurdles in the way of fast growth of the economy and retarded the growth of job opportunities. So these are the three main causes for unemployment. Let's just recap the three main causes. First is underdevelopment, second is inadequate employment planning, and the third main cause is rapid population growth. Now coming to the next heading, suggested remedial measures. In the light of the above mentioned causes of unemployment, we now discuss the measures that can help us in eradicating this evil. Expanding volume of work is the first remedy. The one and the foremost solution of the problem of unemployment lies in enlarging the opportunities for work. This needs to be done rapidly and at an increasing scale, so as to clear the backlog of unemployment, which is substantial, estimated at 23 million persons on April 1, 1992, and to provide jobs to the large additions being made to the labor force which is estimated to be 35 million during 1992 to 97, and another 36 million during 1997 to 2002. The work to be expanded has to be both in the sphere of wage employment and self-employment. In fact, this has to be more in the latter category, as most of the workforce at present are self-employed. The ultimate avenue of more employment has, of course, to be found in the industrial sector, as also in the service sector. This is also the cause of developed countries. However, this will take time in India to materialize. Even the high industrial growth in recent years has not been of much help in this regard. In the organized industrial sector, for example, the additional employment has absorbed only a fraction of the unemployed and underemployed. Hence, for a long time to come, the key role for employment needs to be assigned to the growth of agriculture. Significant contributions in this sphere can also be made by small-scale and cottage industries, as also other activities in the unorganized sector. Thus, the pattern of sectoral expansion as envisaged above amounts to the higher growth rate for the economy. In recent years, the growth rate of the economy has been around 6%. It has to be raised to a higher rate with the pattern of growth biased towards more employment. However, in promoting an employment-oriented production structure, it is important to ensure that it is consistent with the comparative advantage of the country and has a built-in bias for modernization and technological upgradation. It is only then that we can provide for higher income jobs. And the second remedy is raising capital formation. It is also necessary that the accumulation of capital is stepped up. It helps employment expansion in two principal ways. One, it becomes possible to maintain the existing activities as also to expand the current activities and set up new ones. For example, the maintenance and replacement of the existing capital stock are necessary to keep up the present level of production. Similarly, capital is needed to expand the volume of work. For example, an increase in agricultural production depends much upon new irrigation facilities, more implements, etc. In some way, setting up of industrial and service activities require such capital assets as building, for example, factories, offices, etc., and machinery, etc. Secondly, capital formation directly generates employment in the capital goods sector. The production of mother machines, that is, machines give rise to employment. This also provides capital goods for the production of various other types of goods like consumer goods and services. Thirdly, the fast rise in capital formation will add to the capital stock of the country in a short period of time. This will be raising the capital per worker, increasing substantially the productivity of the labor. This will in turn raise the income of those who work. The important thing about capital formation is that it should receive priority both in timing and resources. so as to rapidly build up the capital stock right from the initial stages of development. India rightly started with the strategy of quickly building up the stock of capital in the country. This line finds its support in the models of Fieldman and Mahalanobis, which show that over a period of time, faster growth of employment would result if more investments are initially directed towards more capital goods. The alternative to the acceleration of capital formation can be the promotion of labor-intensive activities. This cause can no doubt promise more employment, but this will be only in short run and at lower income. In the long run, this will be far less beneficial compared to the line which stresses the increase in capital stock. It enables the country to realize ever expanding job opportunities and at higher income level. The country has already achieved a reasonable rate of capital formation, and in the recent years, the gross domestic capital formation has been around 24%. This rate needs not only to be maintained but also stepped up to around 30%. The next heading is approximate mix of production techniques. This is the third remedy. It is also necessary to choose such a combination of capital intensive and labor intensive technologies of production as it generates maximum employment. On the face of it, labor intensive activities such as cottage, household activities, as only many agricultural operations promise much by way of employment. But such an argument should not be carried too far. The argument that if we maximize employment in every firm by choosing labor intensive technology, we also maximize total employment is untenable. It is vitiated by the fallacy of composition, that is, what is true of an individual unit is for that reason alone is also true for the macro economy as well. In the choice of technologies, the important thing to be kept in view is the total impact, direct and indirect, that a technology produces on employment. From this angle, capital intensive technologies are by and large more employment creating, and this is so for several reasons. One, the secondary and tertiary employment linkages are larger than in the case of labor intensive technologies. For example, employment linkages of capital intensive industries like fertilizers, petrochemicals, electronics and power have been colossal. It is obvious from the fact that a large variety of industries have developed around them. These are, for example, microelectronics, lasers, printers, fiber optics, and satellites. These have further been integrated with such complementarities as computerization and information technology. 2. Labor, when employed in capital-intensive industries, such as those producing capital goods, give rise not only to capital goods, but generate employment in industries which provide inputs to them. These are, for example, industries producing iron, coal, etc. Labor intensive industries do not produce such like employment effects in any case, not to the same extent.